It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price, marching for life in Washington, D.C.
The largest ongoing human rights march in the world.
That is our top story this Friday. The annual gathering of pro-life activists this year includes one very special guest.
This is a movement founded on love and grounded in the nobility and dignity of every human life.
For the first time ever, a sitting president is taking part in the March for Life in person. President Trump is there, along with tens of thousands of people.
He has absolutely put his money where his mouth is, so to speak, and he's leaned into this issue.
Jeannie Mancini, organizing today's March for Life, she says the president's appearance today has put wind in the sails of the pro-life movement.
Vice President Pence came to the March for Life in 2017, and that was a historic moment. Before that, we'd only had a person at a much lower level from the White House come and attend the March for Life. So just to put the administration in such a forward-leaning position on this issue has been a huge blessing, and it's very exciting for the movement.
Some 100,000 people will march from the U.S. Capitol to the U.S. Supreme Court today, where 47 years ago this week, Roe v. Wade became the law of the land. Since then, over 60 million abortions have been performed in these United States. While the president is standing up for life today, Democrats will have one more day to try and convince the U.S. Senate he's unfit for his job.
If right doesn't matter, we're lost.
In this great country, no one is above the law.
President Trump has placed his own personal political interests first.
The House managers prosecuting the case will have one final shot of convincing Senate Republicans that the president violated the Constitution by pressuring Ukraine to investigate the Bidens.
The quid pro quo was discussed in text messages, emails, voicemails, calls, and meetings amongst top administration officials and top Ukrainian officials.
Democrats are accusing the president of withholding military aid to Ukraine in exchange for political dirt on the Bidens. Senate Republicans say the accusations are getting old.
It is the same thing day after day after day. Rinse it, recycle it, and repeat it. And
tomorrow, the president's legal team will make the case that it's Joe and Hunter Biden who should be under the microscope, not President Trump. Jay Sekulow says he wasn't planning on talking about the former VP, but since the House managers brought Biden up, he's fair game.
They kind of opened the door for that response, so we'll determine as a defense team the appropriate way to do it.
President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, says he'll be releasing evidence soon that proves Joe Biden was engaged in corruption in Ukraine.
I'm going to present over the next 2 to 3 weeks shocking crimes at the highest levels while the Senate is listening to a totally phony group of stories about non-impeachable offenses.
Giuliani says the evidence of Biden bribes in Ukraine was volunteered to him by two informants. He adds that the U.S. Embassy was part of the cover-up.
The embassy was involved in gathering dirt on Trump.
The former mayor of New York says he has 8 witnesses on tape who can verify his claim about corruption on the part of Joe Biden in Ukraine. Containing the coronavirus. 63 people in the U.S. now in isolation units as that virus continues to spread. 13 cities in China, where the bug originated from, are in lockdown. Some 36 million people there are being impacted.
I'm concerned for my parents because my father is a businessman. He travels around the country a lot, and he refused to wear the mask. It makes him, like, uncomfortable.
At least 26 deaths being blamed on the coronavirus. Correspondent Raymond Osencio has more on the situation in Wuhan, China, the epicenter of the bug.
Turmoil at the supermarkets as shelves go bare.
What is happening?
And massive overcrowding in waiting rooms to get screened at the hospital. This woman cries out for a doctor to save her life after finding out she has a fever. Residents are growing more fearful by the day of catching the deadly virus.
That's Raymond Osencio reporting from Wuhan, China today. Back in the U.S., Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar says there are now two confirmed cases of the coronavirus.
The absolute key is to identify people who have potential symptoms, diagnose them, isolate them, and then check to make sure any of their contacts are also not infected.
Azar says the government is being proactive in dealing with the outbreak. At least two people are dead after an explosion this morning at a business factory in Houston.
We have no reason to believe, we have no evidence at this point that terrorism is involved. We don't have any evidence that an intentional act is involved.
The police chief in Houston says the scene of the blast has been contained. The explosion was felt from miles away and damaged nearly every single home in that Houston neighborhood. Still to come this Friday, local react to the coronavirus, electronic scooters in New York, and Kevin Malone in Scranton.
Good afternoon to all. Things are quiet weather-wise now, but some messy weather is coming this weekend. Forecast details are coming up.
Thank you, Kevin. Checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Friday, January 24th. For the second weekend in a row, a storm system going to bring messy weather to our listening area. Unlike last week, though, this storm looks to be more wet than white. Some of the higher hilltops in the south towns of Buffalo will still pick up 3 to 6 inches of wet, slushy snow. For everyone else, though, it's mainly a rain event. That rain will be heavy at times starting tomorrow. Concerns over the fast-spreading coronavirus are growing. There are now two confirmed cases in the U.S. Dozens are dead in China. Hundreds more have been sickened.
They're going to call this a global health emergency very soon, especially if it continues to spread beyond China. My biggest concern is that there's likely a lot more cases in China than we're hearing about. If they're closing down and locking down entire cities, it's because there's more than 600 cases.
Broome County Medical Director Chris Ryan says the virus can spread from pets to people, and that's a problem.
Coronavirus could move from animal species into a human, and then evolution happens, and that virus gains the ability to transmit from person to person.
The Pennsylvania Health Department, meantime, has advised healthcare providers to be on the lookout for the virus. Hospitals across our listening area are educating folks on the symptoms, and airports are screening travelers coming into the U.S., from China. The Danville Area School District in Montour County, Pennsylvania, now shortening the length of the school day starting next fall. High school biology teacher John Keller says 35% of students are suffering from anxiety, stress, or depression.
I notice it from students. I had a class where there were a group of students that came in after having been in another very difficult class, and there were two of them that were in tears to the point where I couldn't go on with my lesson because of the stress.
The Danville School Board voted to reduce the school day from 7.5 hours to 6 hours, 45 minutes. Instead of starting classes at 7:30 in the morning, the opening bell will ring at 8 a.m., starting next fall in Danville, PA.
I'm excited for the later start so I can get more sleep. And I think that we can get the same amount done in a shorter school day.
The Danville Area School District currently has the longest school day of all 12 schools in the central Susquehanna region of Pennsylvania. A former Western New York congressman's son has been spared prison time. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
27-year-old Cameron Collins, the son of ex-U.S. Representative Chris Collins, avoided jail time Thursday after pleading guilty in an insider trading conspiracy with his father. The younger Collins faced at least 3 years behind bars, but instead was fined $150,000 and will serve 500 hours of community service over the next 5 years. Meanwhile, another man involved in the scheme will find out today if he's going to prison. Prosecutors say Steven Zarsky used info gathered in the scam for his own benefit and to help family and friends. The U.S. Probation Office is recommending Zarsky spend 6 months in custody, while his lawyers believe he should receive community service. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Pennsylvania now joining a multi-state lawsuit challenging a federal regulation on 3D guns. Attorney General Josh Shapiro says he's suing President Trump over his latest attempt to allow blueprints for those guns to be published online. Critics argue the gun blueprints would make it easier for terrorists to access weapons. New York State's ban on single-use plastic bags will start in March, but Wegmans stores getting a jump on the ban. They'll ditch the bags starting on Monday.
We're getting ahead of the New York State plastic ban. We're just a little bit before that by using less plastic bags.
That's Zach Woolridge. He runs the Wegmans store in Elmira. Governor Cuomo drawing up new regulations for the legalization of electronic scooters and electronic bicycles in New York.
It is, frankly, right now the Wild West when it comes to e-bikes and e-scooters. We need clear laws, we need clear rules, we need clear regulations.
Cuomo says transportation alternatives are necessary, especially in the Big Apple.
We need an alternative to automobiles driving in New York City. The volume is paralyzing. The cost is prohibitive. It is environmentally destructive.
Some city lawmakers are pushing back here, saying e-bikes and e-scooters will make the streets of New York more dangerous. More fallout from the state fair extension plan in New York. Governor Cuomo wants to add an extra 5 days to the state fair in Syracuse, but local officials say that move would pull visitors from at least 8 county fairs across the Empire State.
So if they have to choose between us and the state fair, that's a significant decrease, one way or the other, whichever fair they choose, in their revenue.
Jessica Underberg is in charge of the largest county fair in New York, the Erie County Fair in Hamburg. She says extending the state fair by a week will hurt local fairs.
It impacts livestock exhibitors. It impacts the business model of people who plan on that revenue.
Governor Cuomo says he wants to make the state fair in Syracuse an 18-day event starting next year. Well, some politicians become lobbyists when their careers flame out, but others take up golf. Former Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack moved to California to try his hand at stand-up comedy. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
Stack's profile page is on Backstage, a website for actors and comedians seeking work. There are two videos of Stack at the L.A. School of Comedy in Los Angeles, working through jokes while a comedy coach and classmates cheer him on and offer ideas. Stack already had some acting experience and is a member of the Screen Actors Guild. Comedy coach Sunda Kroonquist said Stack never told her he was a former lieutenant governor. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. And the man known as Kevin Malone on the hit show The Office returned to the fictional city for the Dunder Mifflin Paper Company yesterday, Scranton, PA.
I'm from Georgia and I live in California, but Scranton still somehow feels like home.
Brian Baumgartner played the bumbling but lovable accountant, Kevin, on the show's 9-season run.
I thought, you know what, I think I need to go back to Scranton and say hi to some old friends and hear what the office is now, what it means to the town now.
We have a great community in Scranton and everyone loves this show so much.
We watch The Office all the time. It's one of our favorite shows, if not our both of our favorite shows. Ever since he was little, he's loved it.
I'm with you. During his brief stop to the Electric City, Baumgartner visited the backyard ale house where a wrap-up party took place after the show ended in 2013. Eli says goodbye. Sunny time, 2 minute drill.
Yeah, the big story, Eli Manning retiring from the New York Giants. He said today, it's just time.
I think it was the right thing to call it a career and to end it instead of trying to uproot my family and leave and try somewhere else. This was the right decision, and I know it is, and I'm at peace with it. I think that's what has made this day a little bit easier.
Manning played 16 seasons for New York and guided Big Blue to a pair of Super Bowl championships. He's one of only 5 players in league history to win the Super Bowl MVP twice. Big news from Australia, tennis phenom Coco Gauff pulling off another major upset. The 15-year-old knocked out reigning champion Naomi Osaka in the Open's third round in straight sets, 6-3, 6-4. Here's Naomi on the loss.
I don't really have the champion mentality yet, which is
like someone that can deal with not playing 100%, you know? And I've always wanted to be like that, but I guess I still have a long way to go.
Another big loss.
It's over. Serena has been stunned.
Serena Williams knocked out in three sets. Serena had 56 unforced errors. That's just not how she should play.
It's about just me playing good tennis, and I didn't do that today. And that is more disappointing. So it's not even about the win, or it's just more about I'm better than that.
Other winners on the women's side, number one overall seed Ashley Barty, Simona Halep wins, and Allison Risk advance. Madison Keys knocked out, as was Caroline Wozniacki in her final tournament as a pro. On the men's side, John Isner advances. Tennis Sandgren knocks out fellow American Sam Querrey. Rafael Nadal, of course, on to the next round, and Roger Federer needing five sets to advance. It's NHL All-Star Weekend in St. Louis. Skills competition takes place tonight. We'll feature events such as fastest skater, save streak, accuracy shooting, and more. The All-Star itself is set for tomorrow, features a 3-on-3 tournament between four teams representing the league's four divisions. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the boys are back. Capital Connection on the way. Plus, what those U.S. senators are actually doing at their desks at the impeachment trial.
As tens of thousands march in Washington, D.C. today, it's essential that all of us who are concerned about preborn life adjust to protect it against new and evolving threats. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Even now, 47 years after the deadliest Supreme Court decision in our nation's history, we must update our battle plans for defending preborn lives. First, appointments by President Trump to the Supreme Court have made it more possible that for the first time since Roe v. Wade, the courts could revisit and maybe even overturn the grisly ruling. Second, demand for abortions is in decline. Abortions in the U.S. are at their lowest point since 1973. The abortion market, and make no mistake, it is a market, in America is shrinking and is increasingly dominated by Planned Parenthood, who reported a record number of abortions performed in 2019. Now, no one should think that the overall decline in abortions, which can be traced to a number of factors, including widespread contraceptive use, state-level abortion restrictions, and surprisingly, that young people today are having less sex, that this somehow means the issue's going away anytime soon. According to the Guttmacher Institute, the most recent year we have abortion statistics for is 2017, and that's also the year with the fewest abortions on record. But there were still more than 800,000 abortions that year. Let that sink in. 800,000 human beings killed. The third way the abortion issue has shifted also makes it increasingly difficult to track the actual number of abortions happening in our country. The headline of a recent article in Vice says it all: how women are training to do their own abortions. The euphemism for this new trend described in the article is self-managed abortions. Medication-induced abortions aren't the back-alley coat hanger procedures we used to hear so much about. The routine in which a pregnant woman in her first trimester takes two drugs, mifepristone and misoprostol, to induce a miscarriage is recommended and taught by the World Health Organization, as well as a growing group of pro-choice activists here in America. According to the Guttmacher Institute, more than a third of abortions in 2017 were performed using medication instead of surgery. And those are just the ones we know about. Activists are holding events to educate women on how to use these deadly drugs on their own. Their urgency is no accident. As one activist told Vice, do-it-yourself abortions are a kind of insurance policy in case Roe gets overturned. Put simply, abortion is now being privatized. Though medication-induced abortions may not involve surgery, that doesn't make them less traumatic. The child's life is still taken. And it's not even necessarily easier on women, either. Writing at Christianity Today, Maria Baer describes how mothers taking pills to kill their unborn children must face the aftermath alone. One post-abortive counselor described it in these stark terms: intense cramping, hemorrhaging, delivery of a dead baby. What other so-called medical procedure of this magnitude is conducted without medical supervision? Now, what all this means for the pro-life movement is that overturning Roe isn't the finish line. If we see that day that we've been praying for so long, our work still continues. Privatized, under-the-radar abortion will require that we win more than just court cases. We must win hearts and minds. The more abortion is privatized, the more personal our advocacy must become. Of course, the pro-life community has excelled at that over the years, but it must continue if abortion in all of its forms is not just to be illegal, but also unthinkable. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. An area of low pressure will be arriving this weekend, bringing with it rain, ice, and snow. And although it won't be a blockbuster storm, it will result in some impactful weather conditions at times. Let's spell things out in the forecast. First of all, for this afternoon, there'll be a bit of rain near Lake Erie, otherwise mainly cloudy skies. High temperatures not far from 40. Cloudy tonight, some rain in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Spreading east by daybreak as an icy mix. Low temps in the 30s. Watch for some slippery travel late tonight into tomorrow morning across parts of central New York, the Finger Lakes, and the Twin Tiers. Otherwise, tomorrow cloudy with rain, some ice, and snow. Could be a couple, 3-4 inches in the high ground of the southern Finger Lakes and Twin Tiers. High temps, 30s. Occasional snow and flurries on Sunday with temperatures in the 30s.
Alrighty, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Jason, let's begin with you this week and that massive $178 billion state budget. Hard to wrap your mind around that much money. Despite the fiscal woes that the state's in, the governor is calling for record spending on infrastructure and the environment as well. How is he going to pay for all this stuff?
Well, that's a very good question, and we don't have a lot of those details yet. Both the Democratic majorities and the governor have indicated that they do not want to raise taxes. But if you're raising spending and you're not raising your revenue, you have to wonder where that's coming from. So I think you're going to see some taxes being raised in what they will say are wealthy New Yorkers. Unfortunately, the definition of wealthy is the person who has more than you. Yeah. So that's likely where that's going to come down, as well as new fees and perhaps some expanding gambling opportunities as well.
Yeah, we'll see. He did mention the marijuana thing. Not a lot. But I'm sure that's going to be one of the revenue sources that he's going to be relying on this year. Well, let's head to Harrisburg. And Michael Geer, you are at the March for Life. It's going on right now in our nation's capital. 47 years they've been doing this. And President Trump, the first president ever to attend the rally in person. Explain why this is such a priority for you every year to take part in this and what the challenges facing pro-life lifers are in 2020.
Well, we have several members of our team from Pennsylvania Family Institute down here at the March for Life, which is the largest ongoing human rights march in the world. And it's all to stand for the sanctity of life, for protection of innocent human life from conception until natural death. And The challenges are all around us. We see, on one hand, President Trump coming to the march today and speaking out in advancing life, but we see in many states going in the opposite direction and a radical pro-abortion movement that's pushing through state legislatures around the country that are bringing that pro-abortion mindset, and we have to defend it in Pennsylvania and work to restore life nationally.
Well, let's head back to Albany, talk more about the fallout from the governor's budget address. As he was giving the speech, the pollsters put out a survey showing that the governor's approval numbers are up, still underwater, but they are up considerably from the last survey in November. Does this give him any leverage? I know he's got, one part party rule, rule there in Albany, but does this give him any more leverage, a mandate, so to speak, to kind of ram through his agenda?
Yeah, I don't know that it gives the governor a mandate. Essentially, when the governor is in Albany, he controls the agenda, the messaging, the media. There's so many things that help him and pad his numbers. But really what gives the governor the authority in this is that New York State has, by design, this very strong executive budgetary powers that we give to the governor. And so that's really where the power is going to come from, and ultimately a legislature that really doesn't challenge the governor on too many issues.
Yeah. Human trafficking legislation, a big deal this week in Harrisburg, unanimously passing the House, a series of bills, one bill in the Senate as well. The governor says he'll sign these measures. Why is this such a big deal in Pennsylvania right now, Michael?
Well, it's a big deal in Pennsylvania because sex trafficking is a major challenge in our state and, quite frankly, nationally. We see, whether it's adult bookstores or so-called strip clubs and other things, massage parlors, so many different ways that sex trafficking becomes a part of life in a state like Pennsylvania. And so to give law enforcement the more ability to engage and to help in these situations, to get people out of these trafficked situations, and to prosecute those who are benefiting from it, whether it's those people who are running these establishments or actually having these women and children, sometimes men and boys, in the sex trafficking situation, but also then those who are using those so-called services for their own pleasure, if you will, to be able to prosecute them is going to make a real difference, I think, in this issue going forward.
All right. Bipartisan effort there. We love it. Let's talk about the race to replace Chris Collins, New York's 27th congressional district. I believe this is your stomping grounds, Jason, another Republican. Stefan Mihailu, if I'm saying his name right, jumping in the race. There are several others. This is going to be happening on primary day. How concerned are you that because of when this is happening, that it will give the advantage to the Democrat, Nate McMurray?
Yeah, that's right. It appears that the governor is going to call this special election, although he has not formally done so. He has indicated through his attorneys that were in court just earlier this month that that special election for Congress will be on April 28th, which coincides with the presidential primary day. And because there is this contested race for the Democratic candidates, that's likely going to drive a ton of Democrats to the polls. And so those voters that would like to support the Republican conservative-minded candidate are going to have to make sure they're working hard to get to the polls on April 28th.
Yeah, McMurray made it close against Collins, who, of course, was sentenced to prison last week. So we'll keep our eyes on that race there. Big court case, Michael, the Little Sisters of the Poor, who you've talked about on this program before, getting their case heard before the U.S. Supreme Court. Explain why our listeners need to be paying attention to this.
Well, and especially people in Pennsylvania need to be paying attention to it because the case is called Little Sisters of the Poor versus Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's Attorney General Josh Shapiro, who is radically pro-abortion and I think has his eyes set on the governor's seat sometime in the future, he's the one that's going after Little Sisters of the Poor related to this contraceptive mandate that started with the Obama administration. That egregious mandate was relieved by the Trump administration. And then Josh Shapiro, our attorney general, decides to sue the Trump administration and try to force groups like Little Sisters of the Poor to continue to pay for and or at least to provide insurance coverage that covers contraceptives, including the morning after pill and others that can cause abortions. You know, Attorney General Shapiro needs to remember that groups of nuns don't typically need contraceptive, but this is the sort of heavy hand of the pro-abortion lobby at work.
Yeah. Jason, some in Albany want to expand the Child Victims Act for another year. Of course, we remember the historic law that passed last year, and not a day go by that we don't hear about another lawsuit that's pending because of this. Do you support another year to look back on these decades-old cases, or is a one-year look back enough, in your opinion?
You know, I'm not so sure there should have been even the one-year look back. I mean, I agree that there's been a number of injustices that have occurred regarding many of these child molestation cases. But the statute of limitations exists for a reason. And to now take it from the one year to another year it's just highly problematic for schools, churches, organizations that many of the accused are deceased already. Witnesses may have been deceased. It's going to be very hard to mount a defense in cases where there is wrongful accusations and simply just people looking to also make a buck.
Yeah, the litany of attorneys love that, but a lot of folks maybe not so much. And then finally, Michael, the Independence Law Center this week sent out, for lack of a better term, a cease and desist letter to more than 50 public schools accused of censoring students' free speech rights, religious speech rights. In what ways are these schools violating these students' rights?
Well, we had some interns researching school policies and found that more than 50 school districts in Pennsylvania have policies or student handbooks that prohibit the students from making statements that say their faith or religion is better or has truth claims that are better, let's say, than other religions. And that's an unconstitutional violation. Now, we understand the notion of bullying, but those kinds of situations where some Pittsburgh Steelers fan makes fun of an Eagles fan in school can be dealt with bullying types of rules. But free speech and religious speech specifically should not be singled out, and that's what these school districts are doing. And basically saying if a student quotes Jesus as saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life, no one comes to the Father but through me, that's against the school policy, and that should not be part of school policies.
Yeah, and you've given these schools till, what, April 1st to rewrite their policies, yeah, or else they could face some legal challenges, correct?
Right, and courts have already ruled that those policies are illegal and unconstitutional. We're just trying to get the school districts to change their policies to line up with what court rulings have said.
All right. And if you want to learn more about that letter that's been sent to the districts, where can they find you online, Michael?
PAfamily.org.
New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms, you've got your big Legislative Day event coming up. Jason, if folks want to register for that, where can they do it?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
They get it done each and every week. Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. An area of low pressure will be arriving this weekend, bringing with it rain, ice, and snow. And although it won't be a blockbuster storm, it will result in some impactful weather conditions at times. Let's spell things out in the forecast. First of all, for this afternoon, there'll be a bit of rain near Lake Erie, otherwise mainly cloudy skies. High temperatures not far from 40. Cloudy tonight. Some rain in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Spreading east by daybreak as an icy mix. Low temps in the 30s. Watch for some slippery travel late tonight into tomorrow morning across parts of central New York, the Finger Lakes, and the Twin Tiers. Otherwise, tomorrow cloudy with rain, some ice, and snow. Could be a couple, 3-4 inches in the high ground of the southern Finger Lakes and Twin Tiers. High temps, 30s. Occasional snow and flurries on Sunday with temperatures in the 30s.
Alrighty, Kevin Williams, have yourself a fantastic weekend. Finally, this Friday. So, what are those U.S. senators doing during the hours and hours and hours of talking that's going on at the impeachment trial of President Trump? Well, under the rules, they're supposed to be taking notes and sitting at their desks. They are not doing that.
I can tell you that Rand Paul has excellent either freehand or tracing drawing skills. He's working on a very nice picture of the U.S. Capitol in his notebook right now. And Marsha Blackburn, the new senator from Tennessee, was reading a book.
NBC political reporter Garrett Hake says several senators have completely checked out.
In a throwback to 2017 or so, there are a number of senators on the floor who have fidget spinners today to help keep at least their hands occupied, although their minds could still be paying attention.
Probably not. Hake says North Carolina's Richard Burr was seen passing out fidget spinners to his colleagues as proceedings got underway. Burr was playing with a blue one while listening to arguments by House Democrats, or at least pretending to listen. See, kids, even the adults have trouble paying attention in class. That is the world we live in this Friday. As always, thanks for coming along. Have a great weekend, won't you? I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to The Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.